This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
There's a lot that could impress you about the all-new Honda Prologue EV. True, it's got class-leading passenger space and clean, thoughtful design and intuitive technology. But what really sets the Prologue apart from the competition is that it's more than an EV. It's a Honda. Honda, the power of dreams. Visit Honda.com/Prologue to learn more.
Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart. But we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits. A uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart. But entirely smooth and squishy. Mmm, a powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine.
Welcome to the Olive Podcast. I'm Gurdeep Loyal, Olive's regular trend columnist and podcast host for this week. Each week, we catch up with fascinating characters from the world of food as they share their food stories, advice, and expertise. I'm delighted to welcome Özlem Warren to the show. Özlem is a Turkish culinary expert, cookery class instructor, and author of Özlem's Turkish Table. Her latest book, Sebze, Vegetarian Recipes from My Turkish Kitchen, is about to be released. Welcome to the show.
Merhaba, and so lovely to talk to you here.
Hello, welcome. It's so nice to have you. Firstly, huge congratulations on the new book. How does it feel to see it going out into the world?
So exciting. You know, we are counting down now, and it's, you know how it is. You spend all that time living through it, and I can't wait. It's been a long time coming, long time coming.
Amazing. So one of the things that I love about the book is you talk a lot about your southern Turkish sort of upbringing in Antakya, and that's a huge influence on the book. Tell us about southern Turkey in particular. I love the way that you go into kind of in depth about this very particular part of Turkey. Tell us about it.
Thank you so much. Southern, I'm going to say Türkiye because that's the sort of the official name we use, but most people know it as Turkey too. It is my roots. We have been there for over five generations. My grandfather, his grandfather, they all been there. They were the food merchants. They were really at the heart of the community. Antakya, my hometown, is ancient Antioch. It's an ancient city. It dates back to the biblical times. Early Christians settled there. It is a really cradle of civilizations. There's this tolerance and diversity. There's the Jews, there's the Christians, there's the Muslim community that lived there. Of course, we had the devastating earthquake last year, which really wiped a majority of Antakya as well as southern Türkiye. But they're very resilient people. I was there during the book shoot. It was important to go back to my roots to showcase and champion the local producers there. But it is a land of bounty, generosity, hospitality. And it really hugely influenced how I look at food and how I embrace it.
Absolutely. I mean, tell us about the cuisine of that part of the world. What's unique about the cuisine and the produce in particular about that part of Turkey?
Well, it's a very bountiful land. So think about Eastern Mediterranean, the Levant. There's a massive influence of the Levant. It's right by the Syrian border. So my uncle Shakir and my grandfather Supi, they were food merchants. So they would trade fresh and dry produce with next door Aleppo as well as within the community. My grandfather would come home with cases of figs and aubergines and pomegranates, and there was an open door policy. So, you know, my grandma would say, Özlemcim, now you'll take so much tomatoes and whatever, patlıcan, aubergines to Uncle Mehmet, take this one to Şefika, you know, but everything is in abundance. So you are soaking up all that bounty, all that fresh produce, but as well as you'll talk about later, I know, just finding ways to really make the most of everything. When peppers are in abundance, they turn into paste and pickles and dried. You know, you see all that process going in front of you. It's like a, you know, theater of food heaven, really.
I love that. I mean, talking about theater, the other thing that you talk a lot about in the book, and we'll come on to a bit more about the book, is going to markets in Istanbul in particular and the abundance of vegetables. I mean, talk us through the markets of Istanbul. And then, I mean, I'd love to know more about what led you to then write the book.
Oh, well, you know, again, my dad, dear dad, Orhan, was a real foodie. And we were lucky enough to have this lovely locus pazar farmer's market within 5 minutes walking distance. So we would have our wheelie trolley with him and toddle through the market every couple of days. You know all the vendors, right? So you chat with the vendor, Ahmed, see how his family doing, caressing tomatoes and aubergines and picking up. You know, no one really goes to the markets with a shopping list in hand or saying, I'm going to make this recipe, I'm going to get that. No, the market dictates what you are cooking at home. So you look at, oh, there's a lovely, you know, artichoke today. Oh, I'm going to get that. Oh, I can combine it with some rice and herbs and cook in olive oil with flavor with lemon. So it's that bounty of variety of grapes, seasonal produce, not only that, but also cherez, the nuts, dried fruit, olives galore, cheese galore. And of course, you'll be hungry looking all that there's a street stall selling gözleme. You need to have a little sip of chai and a gözleme and watch the whole market go in front of you. When you have that incredible bounty, it's so hard not to be inspired, you know. And that was really the starting point of Sebze, to champion that bounty, champion that generosity, and really simple ways of enjoying it, not complicated, really simple ways.
Yeah, I love that. It's such a sort of present sensory way of cooking that's very immediate and is
connected
to people and to the land. So yeah, tell us a bit more about the book. So sebze, for people that don't know, what does it mean, the word?
So sebze means vegetable in Turkish, and its roots goes back to Persian sabzi. And it's no surprise there, because, you know, the land of Anatolia, where Turks made it at home, as home, was a home of the Hittites and the Persians and ancient Greeks and Byzantines and whatnot. So we did borrow so many words from all that incredible heritage that Turkish cuisine, in a way, had a chance to share when the Ottomans landed there. So it is a real celebration of seasonal produce, vegetables, grains at home that many people not very familiar of. But having said that, there's some lovely desserts and cookies and whatnot in the book too.
Yeah, and you really go into this. I mean, one of the things you talk a lot about is wanting to sort of make people think about Turkish food differently, and not just being kind of kebabs, but being this cuisine that's this sort of ancient mosaic of cultures. I love that phrase, the ancient mosaic of cultures. And you really bring this sort of idea through. Like, tell us a little bit more about that and how you're kind of expressing that in the book.
I mean, the whole idea was really that when I started living abroad, I really noticed many people thought we only eat kebabs and nothing else. We love the stuff, don't get me wrong, but there's so many other lovely things that we make, from mezes to börek and whatnot. But the Turks were nomads. They lived in Central Asia around 6th century, and their diet was really based on mostly flatbreads, kebabs, and yufka are thin filo sheets, dates back to that period. Extensive use of yogurt dates back to that period. But being nomads, they traveled westwards, and as they traveled, they got in touch with other culinary, you know, influences. And the word mantu, for instance, a Chinese word means dumpling. We say mantu do for our dumplings. So a lot of interaction with them. But as they traveled westward, they made Anatolia, today's land of Turkey, mainland, their home. And Anatolia at that time were a cradle of civilizations. You know, there was the Hittites, the Eurasians, the Persians, the that was the Eastern Roman Empire, with Constantinople being the, you know, the capital at that time. So the Turks got all that, you know, started to have the influence from those different communities. And when they formed the Ottomans, the Ottoman group, and they conquered Constantinople in, I think, 1453, that literally changed an era, that the what was the end of the Eastern Roman Empire, and the Ottoman Empire started to flourish. And at their heyday in their 17th century, they were a massive empire. They were all the way up to Eastern Europe, Vienna. They couldn't conquer Vienna, but they left the coffee beans, which started the coffee tradition. Big chunk of Northern Africa, you know, part of Middle East, Southern Russia. So you can just imagine all that influence of different communities.
But it's this culture of kind of collecting different cuisines, but then also spreading those cuisines as well around the world. I mean, so many cuisines of the world are then influenced by Turkish cuisine, aren't they? I mean,
absolutely. So now you have the baklava, many versions of baklava all through Eastern Romania, you know, Eastern Europe. You're right. It's also, I think, Ottoman cuisine was a real, Ottoman palace kitchens was a real force of influence. You know, in their heyday, they were about 13 chefs and sous chefs in Topkapı Palace kitchens cooking for 10,000 people a day. And there were the Jews and the Greeks and the, you know, Arabs, all the communities living under the Ottoman umbrella, bringing their flavors to the cuisine. And Sultan being the sole controller of the spice route, the very best of the spice anyway comes to the spice market, Mısır Çarşısı in Istanbul, feeds through the palace and feeds through the rest of the country. So with that melting pot, there were so many influences that really affected the cuisine.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. I mean, I'm Indian and I know that the origin of the samosa is Turkish. It's the samusak. Is the original, is actually the origin. So I've always felt very connected to Turkish cuisine.
Say paneer and we say peynir for the cheese. Okay. So, you know, it's...
There's a link there, there's a link.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
There's a lot that could impress you about the all-new Honda Prologue EV. True, it's got class-leading passenger space and clean, thoughtful design and intuitive technology. But what really sets the Prologue apart from the competition is that it's more than an EV. It's a Honda. Honda, the power of dreams. Visit honda.com/prologue to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, let's go into the book a little bit more. What I love is that you talk a lot about Turkey being the home of wheat, and you open the book with this incredible chapter all about Turkish breads and pastries. Let's talk a little bit about this. Why did you choose to open the book with that? And what are some of your favorite Turkish breads and pastries?
I love, honestly, I absolutely adore the savory bakes and the breads. You're right. We've been, you know, Anatolia is home of wheat, that they've been growing wheat for about 10,000 years. It's incredible. I think one of the very ancient settlement is in Göbekli Tepe in southern Turkey, where they found the wheat growth and whatnot. And there is a variety, and bread is sacred, really. I never forget my dear father, Orhan, even if he was having pasta, there was always bread on the table. Bread is an essential part of what we eat, but as well as the savory bakes, you know, with yufka, that I try to explain in the book. There's with different with cheese, with spinach, with mashed potato. There's also use of corn, especially at the Black Sea region, where we grow most of the corn. We make cornbread there. So I think it was quite a good fit to start because it's such an essential part of the cuisine, but also practical, really. That's why, you know, being a cookery teacher, it's really important for me that A, the recipes inspire, and B, people think, oh, okay, I can do that. You know, it's not a rocket science. It looks pretty doable. So I really hope they get that sense that they can do it.
It's
and
doable.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's very, that's what I think is really wonderful about the book, is that the recipes just feel so inviting. One chapter that I was really drawn to, and I didn't know much about, was the Turkish soups chapter. I don't know if people are that familiar with Turkish soups. Talk us through these, because also they're a real celebration of the vegetables of the region, aren't they?
It really is, and thank you for pointing out that chorba, as we say in Turkish, soups is another really important chapter. It's one of the cradles, I suppose, the main pillars of the cuisine. Almost every meal traditionally starts with chorba, but in Anatolia, soup can be also your meal of the start of the day. For instance, that bulgur and lentil soup, ezogelin çorbası, the working folk would have it to have a substantial start, nourishing really. And Turkish soups are great value. They make use of whatever seasonal veg you have in hand. Mostly they combine with grains or a little bit of pasta or dried pasta like erişte we have. So in the book, there's a lovely example of Black Sea speciality, borloti soup with colored greens and whatnot. Another soup, pumpkin soup with chestnuts, again showcasing.
Yeah, I saw that one. That looked delicious.
When you go to southern Turkey, there is the use of chickpeas and legumes and yogurt, but then you flavor with pul biber and dried mint yogurt. That adds another additional flavor to that. But the main thing is that they are very doable. Really, I try to give recipes as guidelines. I say Swiss chard there, but if you don't have it, use kale, use spinach. It's just the idea for you to take on board.
Yeah. And I love this. And you do talk a lot about the idea of Turkish food just being a cuisine that's been founded on zero waste and sustainability just from the outset. You know, it's been the essence of the cuisine for hundreds of years. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. Again, one of the things that not many people were aware, but we grew up like that. You know, when the aubergines, patlıcan, as we say in Turkish, are in abundance, and we have over 200 recipes to celebrate that as our national vegetables, actually fruit, as you know, with the seeds. Over 200 ways of enjoying it. You bake it, broil it, smoke it. When it's in abundance, you dry it to use when it's out of season. We make paste out of excess produce. Pickles we make to use when they are not out of season. Bread, again, very sacred. If there is any leftover bread, I remember mom would tuck in our egg to soften the bread and, you know, make it juicy and use it. Leftover yufka, we make an upside down pan börek with the leftovers of it. So food is sacred, precious, and really nothing is wasted. But sustainability wise, it's based on seasonal produce. But also, again, another example in the bakeries in Anatolia and Antakya, they are really like a community oven. They not only bake your daily bread, but the folk may prepare their stuffed vegetables or dolmas or flatbread fillings. You take it to the bakery and the bakery bakes it for you. I have so many memories of that in Antakya. My grandmother preparing her flatbreads with cheese and za'atar and whatnot, and we will toddle on the ancient cobble streets of ancient Antioch, take to the bakery, wait with anticipation for the katık ekmek to be baked, and take it back home. So you wouldn't turn your oven on, so you save energy there. And it's that community, you know, folk might take a couple of aubergines to smoke and someone says, oh, I'll take your aubergine. Maybe I'll give you a pepper or something, you know.
Yeah.
There is that community spirit and sharing.
Yeah. It's so soulful. Just even as an idea to have all these different households eating bread that was cooked in the same oven. I mean, it's such a, It's a beautiful really metaphor of community, isn't it? It's a real lovely sentiment.
And I tell you what, one of the heartwarming thing was that after the earthquake, after that devastation, one of the very first places that reopened was bakeries. People needed that. People needed that connection of community, something that they know as a heritage to keep hold on to. And they would gather there, you know, gathering ideas as to how they are going through life and what are they up to. And it really touched my heart to see they are resilient. There is a long way to recovery. But your food is an incredible connection to your heritage, the recipes. And I'm really grateful that they embraced it.
Another thing that I found really interesting about the book is you talk, and I can't say this word, you're going to have to help me with this, is the chapter on Zeytinyağlı,
which is
Zeytinyağlı, the tradition of cooking vegetables in olive oil. I just found that a really interesting chapter. Tell us about that tradition and some of the recipes in the book that do this.
Sure. Zeytinyağlı means olive oil. So zeytinyağlı is dishes cooked in olive oil. One of my favorite ways of enjoying vegetables. It is very simple, poaching vegetables with a little bit of water, perhaps on the little generous side of olive oil. And the idea is to really showcase that flavor of that vegetable rather than really hiding behind sauces. So when you have the imam bayıldı aubergines cooked in olive oil with abundance of onions and tomatoes and peppers in the book, you do taste the aubergine. It is gentle flavoring with olive oil, squeeze of lemon perhaps to add a bit of freshness. And it is something we tend to use, eat especially a lot when the weather is warm, you eat room temperature or cold. But equally, I love it a little bit on the warm side in wintertime. There's a lovely, easy recipe, zeytinyağlı pazı, in that chapter, charred, cooked in olive oil with peppers, with the addition of a little bit of rice. So it's almost like a whole meal for yourself that can get ready within 30 minutes. So it is a real celebration of vegetables and with the healthy, gorgeous olive oil that we grow on the Mediterranean, the East Asian coast of Turkey.
I love that idea, though, of not hiding the vegetables behind a sauce, but actually turning the flavour of the vegetable itself into the entire
really
dish.
Really champion and
using
that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, olive oil being the vehicle of that flavour is amazing.
Absolutely. You know, the flavours are really mild. You know, we do use spices, but it's never really overpowering the dish. It's really elevating a little bit, adding like pungent cumin when you make hummus, I suppose. But you really want to taste the chickpeas and you really want to, you know, identify the tahini in it and whatnot. So everyone has a chance to really shine a little bit, shall we say.
I love that. I mean, talking about chickpeas, one of the other things that I think was really wonderful about the book is there's such a heavy presence of beans and pulses and bulgur and, you know, chickpeas and cannellini beans, all these things. Talk us through the way that beans and pulses are used and sort of what are some of your favourite bean and pulse dishes? And obviously bulgur in particular, you talk a lot about in the book.
We absolutely love pulses and legumes and bulgur made from the cracked wheat. It is a major grain, especially in southern Turkey as well as Anatolia. But we also use friki. There's always chickpeas and the green lentils and whatnot.
So tell us about friki for people that don't know about it.
So it is the green drum wheat, the one that is not being processed before it became bulgur. It has this beautiful, nutty, smoky flavor. I absolutely adore. You know, when I started living abroad about 20 years ago, we couldn't get bulgur or friki or pomegranate molasses and whatnot. But now we get all these so conveniently, which is yay, you know, because you got to have an accessibility to the ingredients. In the book, yeah, there's various ways to enjoy and champion that. There's a lovely bean salad, Antalya style, with tahini sauce, with a bit of vinegar and garlic and lemon juice. It just adds so much flavor to humble beans. There's kuru fasulye, our iconic bean stew that you would enjoy all around Turkey, and every region might have a variation of it. In the middle Anatolia, they might add pastrami to it. In southern Turkey, they might add some mutton to it. In Istanbul, they might keep it vegetarian. and add no meat to it, like my version. And kuru fasulye pilav is an iconic dish that you would get wherever you go in Turkey. There's a lovely lentil salad, a Black Sea specialty called bat, green lentil salad with fresh herbs. There's our reyhan, our purple basil, tomatoes and spring onions and whatnot. So a real symphony of flavors, but nothing complicated, but just... And also, I think very wholesome. Someone said that Turkish cuisine is really healthy. It really is, you know, without underlying or saying, shouting loud, it is naturally really healthy cuisine.
It's inherently. I think when you're eating such fresh produce, but you're celebrating it and you're not hiding it behind other things, it is inherently just so healthy. I mean, that's wonderful. Another thing that I love about the book is that you talk a lot about Istanbul street food, and you really bring the influences of the street food in. Talk us through some of your, you know, if people were to visit Turkey, what are the street food delights they have to try? And talk us through some of the recipes in the book.
I know I'm biased, but I don't know if you've ever been to Istanbul, but it is a city that lives 24 hours. And we were lucky enough to do location shoot in Istanbul with dear Sam Harris, as well as in outskirts Antakya. It is a feast to eye. You know, your eye, first of all, feel, goodness, I'm full. I mean, there's simit, sesame-crusted bread rings. There is gözleme, flatbreads with different fillings. Oh, I love them. And when I was in high school, I studied in near Ortaköy in Istanbul. And in Ortaköy region by the Bosphorus, you get all the street stalls making... Turkish version of baked potato we called kumpir, with a variety of fillings. That was our Friday treat, going to Ortaköy, get our baked potato with variety of fillings, sit by the Bosphorus, watch the boats passing by and the world. Amazing. There's nohutlu pilav, there's chickpea rice, which again dates back to the Ottoman period, that you buy from the streets. There's many sweet delights. There's the böreks, there's the grilled corns, there's cooked chestnuts. So many.
Delicious. So many delicious things. I mean, talk us through what would be your sort of dream menu from the book, and maybe even tell us a bit about some of the sweet things in the book. If you were putting on a bit of a sort of supper club or a party from the book, what would be the like highlight dishes that you would put around the table?
I am a big fan of Turkish breakfast, kahvaltı as we say, Turkish. And there's a chapter in the book called All Day Breakfast, because for us, kahvaltı, breakfast can really go and enjoy it all day. So I think I most probably I would brunch.
Oh, to celebrate. Amazing. Delicious.
Yeah, to celebrate that. Yeah. So there would certainly be some form of gözleme. There would certainly be a börek or a simit. There will be, we always have salads, some olive salad with za'atar and whatnot. There would be dried fig jam perhaps, or a variety of jams. Eggs, we adore eggs. The whole world now knows çılbır, I suppose, Turkish style poached eggs with garlic yogurt and pul biber yogurt. It could be that, or it could be an unscrambled menemen. I might also have some sweet treats, as you say. There is a lovely poached dried apricots with clotted cream for a nice treat, or some nice almond cookies or pistachio shortbread cookies. Fıstıklı un kurabiyesi, it might have that. There will be also chai, Turkish tea, because we drink a lot of chai. There will be fresh fruit, always orange juice or pomegranate juice. We have that freshness on the table, and unrushed. You know, gather family and friends, ideally by the Bosphorus.
Right.
That's what we used to do for the weekend's treat.
Yeah.
And
so
I
start at brunch
Everyone
and stay all day.
Stay all day and you finish with Turkish coffee, you know.
Wonderful. Oh, I love Turkish coffee. It's so intense.
Oh, amazing.
It has such a... Yeah. Oh, I love it. That sounds like a feast I want to go to. I mean, tell us about Turkish coffee.
Well, Türk kahvesi, I mean, again, it's a more than a drink for us with all the traditions and whatnot, rituals attached to it. But it is a drink of pause. You have a little sip, you have a conversation with a friend, you reflect. You won't rush to Turkish coffee. You know, it's made with 100% Arabica beans, grind to a very fine powder. And it's very aromatic. It was my mother's favorite drink. And I never forget, even while we were in long distance. She's in Istanbul, I'm here. I would call her when I was making mine, and we'll just share whether she had hers, who came home, you know, just really living in that moment. But we also use Turkish coffee in bakes. There's a lovely Turkish coffee marble cake in the book that readers might enjoy. But it is a lovely drink. It is a lovely drink.
I love that. So, I mean, tell us more about what you're up to at the moment then. So obviously the book's about to come out. What are the things you're up to? I know you do a lot of your cookery classes. You do all sorts of stuff. Tell us about that.
Sure. Passion is my teaching, really. So I do teach cookery all around the world. So there will be cookery classes, demo classes with the book and book signings. I will also be going to Turkey. I'm leading 2 culinary tours, and I'm teaching Turkish cookery with those culinary tours with Milk Street, US-based company. And then the Dutch edition of Sebze is coming out in August, so hopefully few events in Holland. But I lived in the US and I taught classes there for 6 years, so I'm hoping to go back to the US later in the year to do tour of book and book signing in Texas at the cookery school there, and perhaps at the north too. So quite a lot of exciting
wow,
stuff bubbling away. Yes,
I love that. And tell us a bit more. So where can our listeners follow you?
That's very kind. Well, I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Özlem's Turkish Table, if they like to have a look and hopefully be inspired with the posts and whatnot. I have a website called Özlem's Turkish Table where I post recipes and coming events and whatnot. I love to be in touch and chat and see how they enjoy, and questions, and always very accessible. So please, we'll be delighted to
get in touch. Amazing.
To meet any food lovers.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much, Özlem, and huge congratulations on the book. It's been lovely to have you.
My pleasure. And thank you so much for having the time to chat with me. I love what you're doing, and it's been a real pleasure to talk.
That was the Olive Podcast. For more information, go to olivemagazine.com. And don't miss our Little Black Book bonus episodes, where guests give us their latest eating, drinking, and travel tips, out every Wednesday.